Hello, I'm Daniel. Today I'm going to talk about the second part of chapter 5 of Way of the Bodhisattva. This is the chapter called Guarding Awareness. Okay, so this is chapter 5. This is the version that I am reading from. It's called Entering the Way of the Bodhisattva. It's new, it came out this year or last year, one of those. So, go see my video of part one before, if you want. I guess you don't really need to, because these actually these chapters I think don't exist in the original text. So just translators put in, oh, this is the section on this, so I'm going to make this a chapter. This is the section on this, I'm going to make that a chapter. So I have taken this chapter and divided it into two. Doesn't matter. You can really start this text almost anywhere and get to where you're trying to go, I think. So, this is if you're following along, I'm in chapter 5, verse 48. Okay. It's a long chapter, so I did decide to split it into two. I could have even done three, but I didn't want to do that. So, at times, this is Shanti Davis talking about his own struggles. Okay. At times when my mind feels the lust of greed or else the urge of anger, I must act, not act, and must not speak. I'll hold still like a block of wood. So he's saying, I don't want to just react to things, which is our normal state of mind, is a thing happens and we react. He wants to just be in the position to decide how to respond to whatever's happening. We want to learn how to respond instead of reacting all the time. How to decide what the skillful response is to a bad thing happening instead of just getting mad and lashing out. So he says, I'll hold still like a block of wood. And this is sort of the other side of that. When I'm excited or else gleeful, when I feel pride or arrogance, when I've thought to dig up faults, revive disputes, or be deceitful, at times when I'm intent on boasting or being disparaging of others, when I'm abusive or contentious, I'll hold still like a block of wood. So what's he saying, right? We need to keep tamp this down, tamp down these negative habits and negative mind states, and instead hold still like a block of wood. Just try to get through it. When I want gains, respect, and fame, or long for a cortege of servants, when my mind wants that I be served, I'll hold still like a block of wood. When we're obsessed with our expectations being met by the world, we need to face that with equanimity. We need to hold still like a block of wood, because the truth is, our expectations are not going to be met by the world. And we really get torn up over this idea of how things are supposed to be, okay? A wish to give up on others' weal and seek out my own benefit, a yen for talk, if these arise, I'll hold still like a block of wood. We want to learn to not be selfish. Selfishness brings unhappiness. It does, every time. And when impatience, laziness, fear, impotence, or garrulousness, or bias toward my own arises, I will hold still like a block of wood. Thus, noticing when their mind becomes afflicted or occupied pointlessly, the heroes use the antidotes to keep it firmly in control. So, what are the antidotes? That's what he's going to talk about next. I like this part. I will be resolute, full of faith, steady, respectful, courteous, conscientious, fearful, calm, and dedicated to pleasing others. I'm going to read that again because I like it so much. I will be resolute, full of faith, steady, respectful, courteous, conscientious, fearful, calm, and dedicated to pleasing others. That's a good list of things to do. That's a good way to live your life. I won't despair at the wishes of the childish who don't get along. I will be loving, thinking that such thoughts are due to the afflictions. So what's he saying? I'm not even going to judge people that have these kinds of struggles. I'm not going to judge people that always bring themselves harm, that make bad decisions all the time. I'm not going to despair. I will be loving, thinking that this is happening because they're afflicted by the same things I'm afflicted by. Directed by myself and beings towards things that are irreproachable, I'll always keep my mind held fast, without a me, like an emanation. So he's saying, I'm going to be less obsessed about myself. Without a me, that means I'm not going to be thinking about myself all the time. Over and over again, I'll think how after so long I have found the greatest leisure and keep my mind unshakable as Mount Sumeru. It just means keep my mind really still. If mind, you will not be distressed when vultures lusting for its meat together tear the body apart. Why do you cherish it so now? Ew, right? So he's saying, now, he's going on to say, why are we so attached to our bodies? Our bodies are gross. Our bodies are sooner or later falling apart and decaying, right? So it's really, there's nothing to hold on to, even your physical form. It's going to fall apart, really, probably faster than you think it will, okay? Oh, mind, why is it that you grasp this body as yours and guard it so? If you and it are separate, then what good does it do for you? Deluded mind, why don't you cling to a clean wooden figurine? How is it sensible to protect this festering machine of filth? I don't think of my body as a festering machine of filth. But he's saying that we can think about it that way when we're just too attached to physical form, ourselves or others, right? First, with your intellect, dissect and separate the layers of skin. Dissever the blade of prajna. Prajna means wisdom. With the blade of prajna, the flesh apart from the cage of bones. Then chop apart the bones as well. Look in as far as to the marrow and analyze it for yourself. What essence does it have? So he's saying that even if you can cut yourself to pieces and you're not going to find a self in there. You're not going to find something you can cling to, you know? There is a style of meditation called chud that is practiced in the Tibetan tradition where, like, the practitioners will sit and imagine their bodies being destroyed. And they will just imagine that. They will just visualize that again and again. I don't visualize, so visualizing meditation doesn't work for me. But that's what this reminds me of. I don't know if he's trying to describe chud practice, but that's what this reminds me of. But he's really saying, man, if you cut apart yourself, you can't find the part that's you. You can't find what you're clinging to anywhere in this body, okay? If even searching with such effort, you don't see it in any essence, why is it that you still protect this body in such an attached manner? Its filth is not fit for you to eat, nor is its blood fit for you to drink either. Its entrails are unfit to suck. What does the body do for you? Gross. Instead, it's logical to be kept as food for jackals and vultures. The bodies of all human beings are merely something to be used. Even though you protect it so, when the merciless Lord of Death takes it to give it to birds and dogs, will there be anything you can do? If you do not give clothes and such to servants who can't be employed, why tire yourself to keep this body that will, though fed, go somewhere else? Now that you've given it a wage, put it to work for your sake. Do not give everything to it if there's not any benefit. Think of this body as a boat, a mere support for coming and going. Make it so it fulfills your wish to benefit all beings. So, I think that we could think in terms of make your body work for you. Or, I've heard this expression, I don't know where it comes from. Somebody famous said it, but it's eat to live, don't live to eat, right? So what does that mean? Well, it means that we should take care of our bodies, but at the same time, we don't need to fulfill every one of our body's desires. We need to do what we need to do to take care of ourselves. Self-care is very important, but at the same time, we don't need to be gluttonous or full of lust. We don't need to give in to every temptation that our bodies have, okay? We can think of our body as a vessel that's taking us where we want to go and not as something that we have to give every pleasure to, okay? In such a way, be self-controlled and always have a smiling face. Abandon glowering brows and scowls, be friendly to beings and straightforward. So, in this section, Shanti Davis just giving life advice, and I think this advice is good. Always have a smiling face. Abandon glowering brows and scowls. Be friendly to beings and straightforward. Be nice to people, right? I feel like we learned that in kindergarten. Just be nice. Just be nice. Try to have a good interaction with everyone you meet. That is the Bodhisattva way. That is what Shanti Dev is suggesting. Do not shove chairs and such about impetuously and noisily. Don't violently open doors. Always delight in being quiet. Cranes, cats, and burglars move around in silence unobtrusively to achieve the ends that they desire. The sages always behave likewise. Ever a student of everyone, respectfully accept advice that's helpful or unsolicited from those skilled in advising others. Listen to what people tell you. Listen. Listen and don't wait to talk. I like that idea. To those who have spoken well, say, you have spoken virtuously. When you see someone perform merit, make them feel glad by praising them. Speak of good qualities discreetly. Repeat them when they're spoken of. When someone speaks of your good traits, understand they know qualities. All efforts are for happiness' sake, but even bought with wealth, it's rare. So I'll enjoy the pleasure of delight in the good that others do. We talk about this thing called sympathetic joy in Buddhism, and it's just learning how to take joy, to take delight, real happiness, when other people succeed. And if we can really do that for real, then there's no limit to our happiness. There's no limit to my happiness if I can really, truly, for real, be happy for other people. For me, there will be no loss here. And in the next, great happiness. Wrongdoing brings gloom and suffering. And then the next, great miseries. When talking, you should speak sincerely, coherently, clearly, pleasantly, without attachment or aversion, gently and in moderation. When you look at a sentient being, think that it's only due to them that you'll awaken to Buddhahood, and look sincerely, lovingly. Inspired continuously by yearning or by the antidotes, great virtues are found in the fields of qualities of benefit and of suffering. Both skillfully and cheerfully, I'll always do my tasks myself. I won't in any of my actions be dependent on anyone. Transcendent giving and so forth progress each greater than the last. Don't drop the greater for the lesser. Think mainly of others' benefits. We're being called to be selfless. Realizing this continually, make efforts for the sake of others. The merciful far-seeing one allows for them what was forbidden. Sharing with those who have fallen low, the unprotected and ascetics, eat moderately, give away all except the three Dharma robes. What's this? So, while this teaching means a lot to us and brings a lot of benefit to us, when he says things like, give away everything, we have to hold that in our minds and remember he was talking to monks when he shared this teaching. And so that has to be in the back of our minds when he says things like give away everything, right? I don't think we should give away everything. For minor ends, don't harm this body that is for practicing true Dharma. By doing so, you'll soon fulfill the wishes of all sentient beings. Unless your compassion and intent is pure, don't sacrifice your body, but give it as a cause to achieve great aims in this and the next. So what's that? That is, we need to take care of ourselves so we can do a good job doing good works in the world. Don't just stop eating. Take care of your body. Dharma should not be taught to those who lack respect, who, though not sick, wear turbans or hold parasols or staves or weapons or veil their heads. And that doesn't have much meaning for us either, but for monks it would. You don't want to teach to someone faking an illness. You don't want to teach to someone who doesn't treat the teachings with respect. I think that is important. Don't teach the lesser, the vast and deep, or women unless a man is present. Approach with equal reverence foundational and higher dharmas. Okay, so I need to take a minute to talk about that. Don't teach a woman unless a man is present. We can interpret that in a way that makes me uncomfortable. We could interpret that as women can't learn this alone. Women need a man. I don't think that's what Shanti Dave is getting at here. I think that Shanti Deva had amazing foresight, and he even then knew about power imbalance and gender disparity. Okay? So when he's saying, don't teach a woman unless a man is present, I think he's saying, you don't need to be alone with a woman. And so we could say that that's good or not good. But the point is that he's saying you don't want to be in a position as a man in a position of power where you could do something wrong. And additionally, you don't want to be in a position where a woman could accuse you of something you didn't do. He's saying to these monks, there's no reason for you to teach a woman alone. For you and a woman to be alone together to teach her. And, gosh, we could be debating that, I think, whether that is a good way to think about things or not. We could be debating whether it's problematic for a male teacher to have a female student and be alone together and be teaching them. Or, I think Shanti Deva maybe wouldn't have had in his mind men victimizing other men, but of course that happens too. But the point is that I think he knew about gender and power imbalance. And that's weird because it was hundreds of years ago. But I think that he knew and he was thinking of problems that could come up. And so if we think that teaching is not okay and it shouldn't be a problem, we could think that way, certainly. But I think if we do think that way, I think we should still give Shanti Deva some grace, because certainly to be thinking that way, he was ahead of his time. He was ahead of his time because he lived in a time and place where men and women were not equal. Not equal at all. And so the power imbalance in that time and place was much more severe than here and now. So, I just wanted to spend time just focused on that. The first time I read that, I was like, don't teach a woman unless a man is present. Like, she needs a man to receive a teaching? I don't think that's the message. I don't think that's the message. I think he knew what many of us are learning now, is that there can be a power imbalance that can be very dangerous. And so he's telling these monks, the safest thing you can do is just not do that. I would say, though, a better message would be, don't teach just one person with no one else present. Just men or women. That's, I think, would be a better message now. But I do think he was forward-thinking when he said, don't teach a woman unless a man's present. Okay. I do not think he was being aggressively sexist and saying a woman can't learn without a man present. I think he was saying, we need to be concerned with this. Okay. Don't introduce a lesser dharma to those who are vessels for the vast. Also, do not disregard conduct or lead astray with sutras and mantras. So that, I think he's saying, we don't want to just study these teachings, but we want to remember to live ethical lives too. And we need to keep that in our minds as well. So we're going to go back to just great advice, or rather we're going to continue with just great advice. Cover it up when you discard a toothstick or else when you spit. It is disgraceful to urinate and such on usable land and water. Well, yeah, right. When eating, do not cram your food, eat noisily or open-mouthed. Do not sit with your legs stretched out. Don't rub both arms at the same time. I think that's just like, don't rub both arms at the same time. I think that's just like, don't eat with your, don't sit at the table with your elbows up, right? It's a thing that like, it's a general politeness thing, and I don't really know the reason. Okay, so, don't be alone with another spouse on rides, beds, seats, or other places. Observe, inquire, and then give up all that makes people lose their faith. Again, alone with the other another spouse. I think that's the same thing. Like, I want to never be accused. I want to never have temptation and to never also be accused. So, I'm not going to enter a dangerous situation. Dangerous. I'm not going to enter a situation where I could be accused of something or where I could give in to temptation. I'm just not going to be around it. And again, we could debate whether that's a good idea or a bad idea, but I still think he's forward thinking. Don't point at anything with one finger. Instead, use your entire right hand to gesture in a respectful way, showing the path in such a manner. Pointing's rude. If you heard that, I've heard that before. To give signal, do not wave your entire arm. Just move it slightly and make a noise, such as by snapping. Otherwise, it is unrestrained. Like the protectorate nirvana, lie down in your preferred direction, and from the outset, with awareness, resolve that you will get up promptly. So he's saying, don't lay around in bed. That's what he's saying. He's saying, we should get out of bed and get to work doing things. I wouldn't shame anyone for laying around in bed, but that is what I do. I roll out of bed and I get to work doing things. The Bodhisattva's practices are taught to be innumerable. Among them, surely first, embrace the ways of purifying the mind. Three times each day, three times each night, recite the sutra in three sections. Because of the Buddhas and Bodhicitta, this pacifies remaining downfalls. I'm going to have to do something to share the sutra in three sections. I do want to share that. So I'm going to figure out how I can do that. But that said, I didn't bring it with me for this video. Whatever you do at any time, whether for your or others' sakes, make efforts to train in the precepts that have been taught for that situation. Buddhism has a teaching for a lot of things. And so that's what he's talking about here. There's not anything at all that victor's offspring should not learn. And for the wise who live like this, there's nothing that will not be merit. So education's good. Do nothing but what benefits beings directly or indirectly. Dedicate solely for beings' sakes everything to enlightenment. Even at the cost of your own life, never forsake the spiritual friend who's learned in the Mahayana and great in the Bodhisattva vow. So we need to take community and spiritual friends very seriously. That's what he's saying. Train in the ways to serve the guru. From the life story of Sri Sambhava, this and the Buddha's other teachings are to be learned by reading sutras. So don't forget to study. The precepts are described in them. So therefore, you should read the sutras. As a beginning, you should read the Sutra of Akashagarbha, because it teaches in detail what must be practiced constantly. Over and over again, you should read the Compendium of Trainings. Or else, for the time being, read the shorter Compendium of Sutras. And also, you should try to study the two by Noble Nagarjuna. I believe the Compendium of Trainings and the Compendium of Sutras are the other writings of Shantideva, which I am going to get a copy of. It hasn't been translated into English quite as many times as Way of the Bodhisattva, these two other texts, but they're out there. And I do think they're worth studying because this text is so good. Shantideva was a genius, I think. What those do not prohibit is the merit you should act upon. To guard the minds of worldly people, noting the precepts, act correctly. In brief, the characteristics of maintaining awareness is just this. Examine over and over again the status of your mind and body. With body, I will practice these. What does just mouthing words achieve? Does merely reciting, reading medical books bring benefit to patients? So, maintaining awareness of just this body, that is just a form of meditation practice. Just, I'm going to sit here and just notice everything that's happening. And I'm not going to try to direct my mind, but rather I'm just going to notice everything that's happening and trying to not get lost in daydreams or in ruminating. That is a powerful meditation practice, and that formless open awareness practice, that is the main practice I do. So, that's it for today. This has been Entering the Way of the Bodhisattva, Chapter 5, Part 2. And I thank you for taking the time to listen to me today. Have a good day.